It was one of many horrific, pointless massacres of the Troubles that made headlines around the world. Three members of the Miami show band gunned down in cold blood by the UVF in 1975. The group, one of the most famous bands in Ireland, was on its way home by minibus to Dublin from a gig in Banbridge when it was stopped at a bogus UDR checkpoint. The UVF planned to plant a bomb on their bus, but it exploded prematurely, killing two of the loyalists. The rest of the gang then opened fire, killing three members of the band and wounding two of them. With me now, one of the Miami Show Band members who survived the attack, Stephen Travers. Stephen, good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
Good morning, Stephen. You wrote a letter to the Irish News last week in which you said a banner in memory of one of the loyalist killers, Wesley Somerville, should not be taken down. Why not?
Well, Stephen, if the intention was to offend, it failed because I wasn't offended at all. But I must admit that I was very surprised to learn that descendants of men who fought and died so courageously at the Somme are now honouring a man who accidentally killed himself while murdering three defenceless musicians. If they've somehow perversely managed to equate heroes like, for example, E.N.F. Bell, Jeffrey Cather, Robert Quigg or Billy McFadden with this person, they're dishonouring such men. But whether by accident or design, the My Gaelic Culture group has actually forced the question, who are your heroes? Who should the children look up to, a World War One Victoria Cross winner or a coward? You can't have both because they're entirely incompatible.
Can you tell us about that night for those people that maybe are too young to understand just how significant it was, just how big the Miami Show Band was at the time?
Well, the Miami Show Band was huge. I think the most significant aspect of the Miami Show Band was that it was loved by both sections of the community, both traditions, and in fact it was made up of Catholics and Protestants. One of our lads, a lovely lad that was murdered on that night, was in fact the son of the Grand Master of the Orange Lodge in Tyrone, our lad Brian McCoy. And still today people tell me that their hero, their heartthrob, was Fran O'Toole.
We're talking about the 70s here, aren't we? And someone said to me yesterday in the office that the Miami Show Band were the boy band, the boy zone, the Westlife of their day.
Well, I suppose in a way, but, Louis bands, you know, they can get away with having an orchestra or marvellous session players behind them when they do concerts. The show bands, like the Miami, were, you know, they had to play their own instruments, and they were, you know, to get a job in a top show band was very difficult, you had to be on top of your game. I look back at the great halcyon days of the show bands when you had show bands like the Freshmen from the North and the Miami, obviously Brendan Boyer, all of these bands, they had something very, very special, and that's why there's such interest in it at the moment, and that's why when I got a call from Hollywood there about best part of 5 years ago, the first thing that the producer said to me, he said, is it true that British authorities actually murdered a rock and roll band? So, you know, it's the whole story is actually almost beggars belief, but the Miami Show Band were huge.
Cast your mind back, Stephen, if you can, to when the attack happened. What can you tell us? What are your memories of it?
Well, my memory of the entire day was one of great excitement, obviously, playing in Banbridge that night, the adulation. I hadn't been in the band very long. I was headhunted for the band in 1974, but I didn't actually join until the end of May in 75. And it was a massive thrill, especially playing in the North. It was like, you know, going to a mini London if you played in Belfast, where you could get all of the gadgets and car radios and stereos and that. So it was a big adventure to play there. Along with that, then the people were just wonderful, and we came away, got into the van, and buzzing as usual. It was a relatively short trip back down to Dublin. We were stopped on the way down by these people, and they were very friendly. In fact, they were joking and we having a good laugh. They were Fran was the eternal wit, and he was laughing and joking with them. But what we didn't know was that they were planning this to put a place a bomb underneath our the front seat, actually, of the van, so that when it went off, you know, nobody would have known about the roadblock, and we would have been framed as terrorists. But look, it wasn't the first time or the last time that a powerful government would attempt to defame and paint an entire people as terrorists, so that the rest of the world would turn a blind eye and excuse it for slaughtering the innocent. But these people were, you know, they were hell-bent on that. They didn't care. But the bomb went off accidentally and killed the two men that were putting in. One of them was the man they're now honouring, Wesley Somerville. And when that happened, the other soldiers began to murder all of our lads. And they were, of course, led by a British Army officer who I saw and heard right in front of me. There's absolutely no doubt about that, regardless of how many times the HET or anybody else tried to browbeat me into saying something else. It was absolutely, that's what happened.
How did you survive?
I was very badly injured. I was struck by what they call a dum-dum. I had never heard of a dum-dum, but I heard of it that night because it entered my right hip, went right through my body, exploded inside and exited onto my left arm. And I actually heard the men, when there was one man going around the field kicking the bodies and to make sure that everybody was dead, I heard a man on the road call down to the soldier that was going around kicking the bodies. I heard him say, "Come on, those bastards are dead. I got them with dum-dums." You know, strange thing is that when I heard him say that, I was pretending to be dead. I thought a dum-dum was a blank because my body was in shock, so I didn't really feel the pain, but my stomach was very extended. I survived. Thank God I survived to tell the tale, and so did Des. Des survived as well. But sometimes, you know, as in, I've spoken many times at victims of terrorism conferences right throughout Europe in universities and conventions, and sometimes, you know, you see the pain in survivors of terrorist attacks, and you know, you lie awake at night and you think, were the guys who were killed actually the lucky ones? I mean, that is the real legacy of this, the futility of this kind of violence.
And so you want this commemoration to remain because it holds a mirror up, Stephen?
It does. It forces us to say, you know,
it's banner. Banner is the better way for me to put it. It's a banner, isn't it?
I know that, you know, I'm very grateful to the people who put it up because, you know, isn't it wonderful that I find myself entirely in agreement with the people that erected this, because we're both pushing an open door. In fact, as I say, we're going much farther to highlight it. We're making a movie about it. I'm grateful to this Margashal cultural group because every little helps. So let's make sure that the whole world knows about it.
Okay. Stephen, thank you very much indeed for talking to us today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Morning to you.